What's up, everyone? This is the one and only Nick Andre. And look, if you're a fan of everything that I do, whether it's writing, podcasting, or anything basketball content related, make sure to subscribe to my playback room. I will be live every Friday live streaming an NBA game. So I will be talking everything about the game itself alongside various topics revolving around basketball. So make sure to tune in, man. Make sure to subscribe. I will leave the link in the description. And let's get into the episode. Sir, welcome back. This is another edition of For the Love of the Game. This is your one and only Nick Andre. Appreciate you guys for tuning in. I hope that everybody's had a really great week and a very productive week, to say the least. Hope everyone's continuing to find ways to get better and just continue to elevate moving forward. Have a really good episode ahead for you guys. We're going to talk some NBA and talk about everything revolving the league. But first, I want to talk about a specific topic that broke news that I think that everybody's excited about. So everybody knows that NBA All-Star Weekend is coming up. We're about 2 to 3 weeks away. And if you've been a fan of the NBA for so long, then you know throughout many decades, the dunk contest has always been the highlight of the show, whether it's Dominique Wilkins or Michael Jordan or Vince Carter or Kobe Bryant or Nate Robinson, Dwight Howard. Who else is there? John Wall, Aaron Gordon, and so many others. You know, the dunk contest was always something to look forward to Saturday night. But recently, maybe over the last 7-8 years or so, the three-point contest has really been a highlight now. And I'm not going to say that it's overshadowed the dunk contest, but it's definitely taken a spotlight as of recently. So, and especially when you have so many dynamic shooters in the league, obviously the league has changed to more of a spacing era where the three-point line is utilized to its maximum. So now we have a lot of prolific shooters that partake in the contest, and you know, they give us a show. You know, they give us a show every single year, and this year is going to be really interesting. So for those who may not know, we have an NBA player partaking in the three-point contest, and we also have a WNBA player partaking in the three-point contest. Obviously Stephen Curry, who is the NBA's all-time three-point shooter in NBA history. And then we have Sabrina Ionescu from the New York Liberty, who is going to take place in a three-point contest. So this is really exciting. For those who may not be in tune with the W, Sabrina had a monster season from three-point land, particularly after the All-Star break. So let me date back to the All-Star weekend. So Sabrina is in the three-point contest. She's going up against, I think, players like Jackie Young, Arike Gumawale. Those are the only two names that come to mind off the top of my head. I have to go back and look later. But she stole the show on that last round and was just unconscious from three. Like, it was one of the more viral moments that took place, you know, throughout that entire weekend. And I don't know what happened with Sabrina, but it's like a switch just happened. Because not saying that she didn't shoot well in those first few rounds, but that last round in particular, it was kind of like she was on go mode and saying, hey, you know, I'm going to close this thing out and I'm going to win this thing. And she was able to do that. I'll be real. Like, I've always known Sabrina to be a good shooter, but I never saw her be able to shoot like that. Like, it was like just limitless. And that momentum from her winning that three-point contest carried over throughout the rest of the year. Like, she was just crazy. She had 13 games throughout the season where she made over 5 3-pointers. So it was just incredible to see. And obviously that played a big role in the New York Liberty getting to the NBA Finals, or excuse me, WNBA Finals. So now she's back. And this time she's on the WNBA, or excuse me, she's on the NBA side. Jesus Christ, I'm getting it all messed up. So now she's back on the NBA side. And this is going to be exciting. This is going to be really, really exciting. She stepped up to the challenge, going up against the greatest shooter that we've ever seen in our lifetime. And I think the show be ready. Now, who do I have winning? I'm just going to be real. I know that probably a lot of my WNBA fans are probably going to be upset with me saying this. I think Sabrina's going to have a pretty good showing. I think she's going to shoot really, really well. However, I'm just going to keep it a buck. Like, you're going up against the greatest shooter that we've ever seen. And I have Wardell Stephen Curry winning that easily. If I'm Steph, I'm not taking it light on her, because I'm sure many people are probably going to expect for her to take it light on Sabrina. And I don't think he should. You know what I'm saying? Sabrina is a great shooter. So he needs to take this. He needs to approach this matchup just like he would if he was going up against any other three-point shooter in the NBA. So if you ask me, I got Steph Curry winning this thing. I don't think it's going to come close. Like I said, I think Sabrina's going to have a good showing, but I don't think she's going to be able to compete with the likes of Steph Curry. But at the end of the day, you know, even though I have Steph winning, it's going to be fun to watch. You know what I'm saying? I love the fact that the NBA and the WNBA are finding ways to, you know, come together and make these things happen. You know, give credit to the NBA for continuing to just be creative when it comes to things like this, and just, you know, just being able to put on a show for the fans. They've had WNBA partake in all-star activities before, obviously during the celebrity games, or even like during like other activities, you know, during Saturday night. So for this to happen, for a WNBA player to be a part of the three-point contest is really, really big. So I'm excited for it. You know, we're about a few weeks away from All-Star weekend. And I just want to see, you know, what takes place. But hey, we have an episode coming up. We're going to talk some NBA hoops. And here we go. Tune in. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I am joined by a special guest, man. This is one of my brothers right here, man. You may have heard me and him on his pod recently about a few weeks ago. And he's been on MSC Hoops for those who be in tune with the show. I got my guy Corbin, man. What's going on with you? Happy to have you on.
Hey, I'm happy to be here, bro. Thank you, man. You are a hoop legend out here.
Now, I appreciate that, man. Bro, I gotta admit, that is a fire jacket you got on. I know the listeners, they're not gonna be able to see it, but yo, that is a fire jacket,
bro. I appreciate it, bro. You know all about the teams. I like the camo feel. Yeah, man, I got it for like $20 too.
$20? That's a steal.
Yeah, I'm gonna hit you up with the link later. But Hollister, man, they have a lot of dope NBA stuff that they're doing a massive sale for.
That sounds like me, honestly. I mean, I get a lot of my stuff from like what is it called, Ross or whatever. I'll find like a whole bunch of like NBA gear and stuff for like 10, 15, 20 bucks.
Oh, wow.
Rocket. Some people would think it's probably about like $100, $200.
Right? It's like
crazy. Yeah. I'm like, nah, I got this over here at this show, man. But nah, I get it, man. But I definitely appreciate you for hopping on. So we're going to talk some hoops, talk some NBA. And let's start with Rivals Week, man, because I wanted to talk about this. Let me just say, from my perspective, Rivals Week is a success. Shout out to Adam Silver and the NBA for making that happen. We saw a lot of dope matchups. We saw early in the week, the Clippers beat the Lakers. The Suns and Mavs played on last Wednesday night. Devin Booker had a monster performance. And then, in my opinion, it was game of the year. And I'm sure that you love this game as well because you're a Laker fan. The Lakers ended up getting that dub out of San Francisco against the Warriors. So what was your biggest takeaway from Rivals Week?
Honestly, like you said, the good matchups. There was a few I was like Suns Mavericks. I was like, is it really like I would think, I don't know, Suns Lakers or something, but Lakers and Warriors.
Right.
I like how Rivalry Week was really more of like time specific. Like Luka and Devin Booker. Like, that's the rivalry. Steph and LeBron. And that's something that can always happen. That way, you're not stuck with, like, I don't know, 2015 Lakers-Celtics. No, 2014 Lakers-Celtics, where both teams are nowhere near what they are. And we're looking back on, like, Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. So I like the fact the NBA adapted with that and made it something that makes sense. And there was some good matchups. I mean, we got the game of the year. I know we're going to talk about that in a bit. Like, we got that out of Lakers-Warriors. That was absolutely great. We got a big game between, you know, the Suns and the Mavs and Devin Booker in the midst of his, what, three-game on 150-point streak or whatever. Like, there was some good matchups. But obviously, mine was Lakers-Warriors. Not only because, you know, Lakers ended up with a victory, but let's be real. It was a really good game.
It was a fun game. Top to bottom,
full of drama, intense. Like, I was hyped.
You talk about a classic performance. Like, that was one of them. And then on top of that, like, I tweeted this, like, right after the game. I was like, it's 2024, and we're still getting great matchups from LeBron James and Stephen Curry. So, and one thing that I'll take away from Rivals Week is, I think it's kind of a mixture of what took place in the past and what we have now. Because, I mean, I'm kind of reflecting back on last year, because I remember last year the Lakers and Celtics had played each other. And obviously, you know, they played last year in 2023. And we had a good matchup there. You know, that game ended up going into overtime. I'm sure people remember LeBron, you know, getting on the floor and everything, you know, going crazy. But Rivals Week has been great, man. And I think the one thing that I could say is that you see a lot of the players, you know, it seems like they get motivated and they get really up for like for these type of matchups. So I'm a really big fan of it, man. But if you want, man, we can break down this Lakers Warriors game, man, because it was a nail biter down to the stretch. Kudos to LeBron for hitting those two clutch free throws. I will say this. So there was I can't remember if it was the first overtime or if it was still in regulation, but I know there was a possession where the Lakers ended up getting the ball. D'Lo has the ball, he's bringing the ball to the court, and then he just takes a three out of nowhere, and I'm like, oh my god, what in the world is going on? And then he just ends up making it out of nowhere, and I'm like, bro, like you have to be like the luckiest guy on earth, because if he would have missed that shot, like we would have killed him. It's crazy.
Absolutely. No, like dude, D'Lo guy, and this is why I love him, this is why I don't want to be traded, whether or not he actually will be traded. Like, the dude has no fear. Dude will just go for it. And I think it was actually in the midst of the overtime. I want to say it was in that second overtime. No, that with the first or second overtime. But, like, that was a game and a half. And like you said, there was big shot. There was a big brass, you know, round objects up in there. You know, you had good performances, of course, by a guy like LeBron, by a Steph Curry. These greats in their late, not even their prime. Like, they're past their prime, but they still very much great players. And they turned back the clock there. You had Draymond Green playing well. You had big shots from Klay Thompson. Anthony Davis was solid as well. Role players stepped up. We already mentioned D'Lo, Jonathan Kuminga for the Warriors. Like, you had a really good game where different people came in with different contributions, and it was down to the wire. It legit was. You had the refs giving bad calls on both sides, whether it was the phantom whistle.
There was a lot of bad calls.
Yep, it was the phantom whistle. That's what I remember notably. Toward the end of regulation, that fortunately the Warriors got the ball back and scored. That's why I even got them to overtime or even a chance at overtime. But the ball had gotten blocked. I think it was a block by Davis. The ball got kind of kicked around to Klay Thompson for a three, and then there was a whistle. The whistle was inadvertent, so it ended up being a jump ball between, I think it was Davis, or it was definitely an advantage for the Lakers. But the Warriors won the tip. Steph Curry scored. And then later on, when you have the Warriors trying to intentionally foul to get the ball back, like Draymond Green just hammered the absolute sugar honey out of Anthony Davis. And
I was going to ask you about that, Bill. Like, what were your thoughts on that? Because a lot of people thought that it was, you know, that it was a flagrant and everything. Right. I mean, obviously you saw Jared Vanderbilt saying, you know, to go look at the screen.
Listen, you got to be more careful. There was a windup. There was a follow through. Like, it definitely was. Like, all of the things you say when you call or whatever, like, that's what happened. And yet, it didn't get called. So I think that was low-key kind of ridiculous. But, you know.
Honestly, looking at that situation, it's like, and this is something that I've been trying to, like, say about Draymond for a while. It's like, you just got to be smart in those plays, especially with the history that he has. And obviously with the issues that he's had early this year with Rudy Gobert and then with Yusuf Nurkic in Phoenix, you just gotta be smarter on that possession, man. You know, I get it. You know, you may want to intentionally foul, but there's just other ways of doing it besides, like, you know, going around just smacking the guy. It's just crazy.
Exactly. Like, that's what I mean. Like, you gotta be. It's like they say, time and space or whatever, time and awareness, situation awareness, right. All of that is something that, you know, you said it, like, you have to be mindful of, especially given your history twice this season. So, no, any other time that might be okay. Not this time.
No, I definitely agree, man. But, no, I mean, Lakers-Warriors, if you ask me, it's game of the year. I don't think anything comes close. And I know that we still have a good few months left in the season. But I think as of right now, there's nothing better than that performance that took place from both teams, honestly, man. I mean, it gave me, like, a really classic feeling of what took place back when LeBron was in Cleveland and obviously Steph was, you know, entering the prime of his career back when they were battling in the finals. So it was just a fun matchup all around, man. And, you know, I just want to see more of that move forward. So there's another game I want to say it's a game that I want to discuss, but Saturday the Sixers play the Nuggets, and obviously that's a potential matchup with Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic. But Embiid ends up sitting out, and it looks like he does have a significant injury. So what were your thoughts on Embiid missing that game, man? It's crazy too, because I saw a stat as well. Like, he hasn't played in Denver since 2019, I believe, which is crazy.
Yeah. It is wild. And honestly, I think it's coincidence. Like, they play what, two times a year?
Yeah.
So, you know, last 4 years, eight times, once in Philadelphia, once in Denver. Both, I mean, Embiid's been battling injuries his entire year of his career. So, like, the odds of him just happening missing, like, yeah, it doesn't look great. But, like, it is what it is. It's been injuries, right? I think this one was only suspect because he was going to play, it looked like, and then 15 minutes beforehand, apparently, they called it back, whatever the case may be, and then made it so that, he didn't play. And so, yeah, the timing of that was definitely sus. I didn't like that. But aside from that, okay, for example, LeBron and KD haven't played a regular season game where they finally did this year. It was the first time in five. Exactly. Like, were they ducking each other? Absolutely not. But KD missed time. LeBron missed extensive time. KD missed it just happens. And they played in the same conference way more than Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic. So I get it. It sounds good. It helps with the storyline or the lack thereof. But if you really look at it, it's nothing to it.
One thing that I could say is Philly actually had a pretty good game in that contest, even without Embiid. I mean, obviously, if they had him, and especially with the week that he had, especially with the 70-point performance against San Antonio, like, I don't know, like that match that could have been another matchup that could have went in overtime, if Embiid does play. But I think what took place was, I think that people thought that Embiid was just ducking the smoke from Jokic, which is crazy because he just had 40. I think he had 41 on him just 2 weeks before that. So I mean, it's like I can't really say that he's ducking him, but I don't know. I mean, I think now, especially after what took place last night against the Warriors with him going out, I think people now can finally see that, hey, he must be dealing with a real significant injury if he's not even able to stay on the floor for an entire game.
Exactly. And I think that's more or less what it is. So yeah, there's no ducking from Embiid. If anything, he's the guy to come to it. You know what I mean? Like, he's not that. I think it definitely is a training staff situation and just not a clear communication between what was the plan and then what it ended up being. Like, I think that more or less was the actual issue,
Right. No, I definitely understand. So one last question before we switch topics. So do you believe that Rivals Week is here to stay?
I hope so. I think it's something that spices it up a little bit. I think it'd only be better if they actually went back to their old school jerseys.
That'd be nice. That's a good idea.
Yeah, switch it up a little bit. Make something like that happen. Like, I think that would be really, really dope. Aside from that, yeah, I think it is, and I think that's a good thing. I think it's a nice balance between the teams. Like, it's a nice kind of change up. Like you said, players kind of get up for it, and I think that helps out a little bit in terms of making it more exciting, more compelling, more of your ABC Saturday games, your TNT doubleheaders, more of that. It's compelling matchups. And I think if it's done right, honestly, also, that's one thing, if I may say, the scheduling needs to be totally different. Like, I don't want to see teams on the back-to-back, that's playing true. Each other. And then that's when you have a risk of injury and risk of players having bad starts. Like, no, if you're going to give us the best two teams in a matchup, also try to give us as best optimal health as possible. To make that actually be something that is enjoyable for the fans and for the players too. So aside from that though, yeah, I think it's a solid thing. It also kind of celebrates the history of the game because some teams are like, well, why is it a rivalry? Like, why would, I don't know, Golden State and Denver be a rivalry or whatever the case may be? Like, these right. teams that do your history. Like, I don't know, look it up. I think it's a good idea.
I think that's something that they should implement as well. Like, maybe on I don't know, NBA Countdown or, the pregame shows on TNT, maybe before the game begins, they can run through a history of the rivals, whether it's the Lakers, Celtics, go back to the 60s when it was Bill Russell and those guys, or the 80s when it was Magic and Bird. And then obviously about 10, 15 years ago when it was Kobe going up against KG and Paul Pierce. So, I think that'll be, especially for the younger fans who may have not been able to witness that, I think that would be dope for a lot of 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds who are looking forward to these matches, but they don't really know the history. So I think it would be dope for for an ESPN or a TNT to really do that, during the or at least before the game to give a lot of younger fans and new NBA fans a little bit more detail on why this is a rivalry.
Exactly. I think you're right. Like, engage the fan base more in the history of the game. Like, everyone else talks about now and realizing. Okay, for example, we talk about the 65 game rule, which I actually am not mad at. Like, I don't think it's a bad right. thing. And you have that thing on Twitter about Giannis won MVP playing the 60 games, and Karl Malone won when playing 49 games, and whatever the case may be. When all of those, if you need history, happened during a lockout season or a COVID shortened season, literally. And one of those was 4 years ago, wasn't even that long.
Exactly.
Ago. So we too busy focusing on the now and the next, and I love it, and the draft and the players coming up in 2025. I love it. Like, that's great. But also, let's celebrate the players that came before us.
Exactly.
Top 75 list and people arguing over who should be on, who should be off, and you don't even know what you're talking about.
Exactly. And that's the thing, too, especially when people have those debates, because it's obviously accolades do matter, but I think people need to go back and just watch and just be able to witness, why we believe this player is great, or why we believe that this team was great and, you know, was the best team in their era. So I've been one of those guys that've been telling people, even like with an MJ LeBron debate. I mean, I know there's a lot of people that will pick MJ, and I know that there's a lot of people that will pick LeBron. And then it's always about, oh, well, MJ has 6 titles, LeBron has 4, MJ has this amount of MVPs, yeah. LeBron has this amount of MVPs. And it's like, I would advise people to just go back and watch. You know, if you want to get to know Jordan, go back and watch him in the 90s. If you want to get to know more about LeBron, then go back and watch his time in Miami or his time in Cleveland or whatever it is, you know, to really understand, like, why this guy's considered the GOAT, or that guy is considered the GOAT. So context really matters when it comes to that, man. You know, it's not just all about the numbers. I mean, I'm a big fan of the numbers, but it's also more context that goes to it as well. But let's go ahead and transition, man. You know, I want to talk about this. We are talking about rivalries, but there might be a new rivalry that might be spicing up that has everybody talking. And that is the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Oklahoma City Thunder, particularly Anthony Edwards against Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Obviously, both of those guys, they've been incredible this year. You know, these are two of the three top teams in the Western Conference as of right now. They just played on Monday. Minnesota got that big win. But there's been a little bit of spiciness, you know, throughout the season series. There was a post game, I think, in the game before the last game that they played. Ant-Man was basically explaining that you can't foul SGA or you can't touch him and everything. And then SGA comes back with an IG post. He says, end quote, they talk about me for my post game, not my post game, referring to versus post game, like actually, like, you know, on the court, and then the post game, like, you know, in the podium or whatever. So what are your thoughts on this possible new rivalry that may take place in the NBA? Do you think it's good?
Oh, absolutely. I think you need more of this. I think that there needs to be some more fire and some more positive back and forth. When I say positive, like, yeah, they're talking smack. It is part of it, but, like, it kind of gets you up for the games. You know, same thing we kind of got between the Thunder and the Spurs from a Chet Wemby scenario, mm-hmm. You know? Like, I definitely think that is something that, yeah, like, this is what we need. You know, again, rivalry week, you fuel new rivalries, you know? And so you have these teams with the young players up and coming, locked in the contract for years to come, with teams that look really good around them so far, can only get better. Like, yeah, they could see each other in the playoff series, you know? Like, legit could see each other in the playoff series, like, maybe this season, right? Definitely for seasons to come. Anthony Edwards, what, 22, 20, 23, 24?
Still young.
Yeah, exactly, 22, 23, I think. And then Shai is, what, 25? Like, yeah, they, like, are still mad young.
Yeah, early to mid-20s. Yeah, I mean, exactly. I'm a fan of it. I need them in a 7-game series. I think that's essential at this point. Because I went back and I watched the game from Monday, and I was saying, I was like, man, like, we need this in a 7-game series. Because OKC has a tremendous young group around them, not even just SGA and Chet Holmgren. You know, you got Jalen Williams, obviously Josh Giddey, and you got a multitude of other guys. Cambridge Williams, and then on top of it, on Minnesota side, you got guys like Nas Reed's been shooting the lights out as of recent. You got guys like, when I'm thinking of Jaden McDaniels, and then, you know, just an abundance of young core guys that, you know, have a bright future ahead of them. So all four matchups that they played, which is crazy. I mean, I'm kind of mad that they don't have any more matchups after this, but all four matchups were intense. You know, Ant-Man averaged around 23 a game during the season series. SGA was averaging around 34, so it was a lot of back and forth throughout that season series for those teams. And I think we need this, because, you know, we always talk about Steph and LeBron, or LeBron and KD, or Steph and KD, you know, a lot of those matchups that we've gotten for a decade plus. But I think that we're still looking for that new rivalry. So if it's SGA and it's Ant-Man, I'm not mad at it. You know, I think the NBA needs that competitiveness, you know, to keep the fire alive, like you said.
Exactly. It's one of those things that make the NBA great. We've had so many of them. The Pacers and Cavs was a hot ticket. Even Pacers and Cavs now, it's still good. You know, you still have guys like, you know, Evan Mobley and, you know, Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland, and then Indiana, Tyrese Haliburton, Pascal Siakam, and, you know,
honestly,
but back then,
I can say now, I mean, maybe so. The Bucks and Pacers have been pretty intense, you know, as
well. That's what I mean. Years.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. No, I was bringing up the Cavs and Pacers because right now you could look at, like, oh, it's a good matchup. But 10 years ago, it was LeBron and Lance Stevenson.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Paul George and those guys. Exactly. Like, that's what made it a rivalry. And, yeah, it changes. teams change, relationships change, you know, friend, you know, James Harden and Russell Westbrook teammates, and then they're not, and then they're teammates again. And, you know, like these types of matchups and rivalries, this dynamic is what makes it so cool. And so I agree, like having, I'm not saying you need to manufacture it. Like, yeah, if there's no natural beef, then fine. There isn't any. But for the most part, there usually is. Mm-hmm. And when there are, the NBA will be wise to, you know, not play up and make it bigger than the game, but just say, hey, that looks like rivalry. Rivalry's week, here we are.
And people have to realize, too, this, well, I wouldn't say this rivalry dates back, but, you know, I don't know. There might be some bad blood even from last year during the in-season tournament because these two teams matched up for that last playoff spot. OKC ended up beating New Orleans in their first playing game. Minnesota ended up losing to the Lakers in their first playing game. And then these two teams ended up meeting. And obviously Minnesota dominated from start to finish. So I think since that point, you know, every matchup that we've gotten with these two teams is only continue to elevate and get better. So that's what I'm a fan of it, man. So if we get these two teams in a 7-game series, you know, I talk about, one of my personal favorite series over probably like the last like 2 to 3 years ago is Memphis and Minnesota in that first round of 2022. But if these two teams meet, Minnesota and OKC, I think that could possibly top it, honestly. I mean, who knows? But
I'm glad you brought that up because I was a big fan of Minnesota Memphis series. Like
that was probably one of the best first round series I've seen in a while.
Absolutely.
Like the back and forth, you know, obviously Ja and Ant-Man and everything. Minnesota ended up taking that game one on the road. Memphis ends up responding. I think Ja hit a game winner in that game five as well. So that was a really good
Pat Beverly with that mini 11-0 run. You had a lot. You had big shots by, you know, Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards, and then all finished by the Wolves losing Anthony Edwards, you know. Thank you to the fans, the kiss that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was good.
No, it was fun. It was a really fun measure. And that's the thing, too, because these are two young teams, you know, who are battling back and forth. So I think that's what the NBA is really looking for right now is like those young teams who can continue to elevate. And I think OKC and Minnesota are definitely doing that. So let me ask you this real quick. So if hypothetical, you know, if these two teams were to meet in a series, who do you think would have that edge? Put you on the spot, man.
You did. I'm going to go with Minnesota, though.
Minnesota? Okay.
I'm going to say OKC is a really good team, really dynamic. They haven't done this before. They haven't been in the postseason yet.
That's true.
Like, it's an adjustment for usually everybody. And maybe OKC can be like that 2012 OKC team. And even that 2012 OKC team, like, had a run in 2011. Like, they worked themselves up to it. So, I don't know. I'm not saying that this Thunder team isn't for real because they most definitely are. But you have guys of experience. Ant has some playoff experience now. 2 seasons. One kind of being a premier player and one being like the go-to guy, you know, that we saw against the Nuggets, even in that 5-game series, right? Karl Anthony Towns been the postseason a few times now at this point. You already know about Rudy Gobert. You already know about Mike Conley. Like, these guys have been through it. You can look down the line. Shake Milton's done it. Like, they have guys.
They got some key vets.
Exactly. Kyle Anderson. I meant to say Kyle
Anderson. Kyle Anderson, slow-mo.
Exactly. You have folks who are experienced. Nas Reed. And the Thunder don't have a lot of guys. Like, Davis Bertans, okay, great. You know what I mean? And Shea's been in the postseason as a rookie with the Clippers. So, like, there's a thing. It's just different. And so, in my mind, I'm just automatically giving the edge to Minnesota just for having that experience. But I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Oklahoma City was to come out and do it. And we'll see how the Timberwolves defense holds up. You know how Gobert's defensive units are in the postseason. Granted, has better defensive personnel, but we'll see how that looks. You know, we'll see who raised their game up to another level in the postseason for OKC aside from Shea. Like, there's a lot of questions there, but I'm going to lean toward Minnesota for now.
You made some valid points. I will say that because even I was thinking about it even earlier before we started recording. And I was like, man, who would win this series? But I think with Minnesota's depth and their experience, I think that will play a major factor, especially in the playoffs. And not saying that OKC will back down. I think that OKC could push it to a maximum 6 games. But I think in the end, especially with Minnesota possibly having home court advantage, I think that'll help them get the edge. So I'm hoping we get that. I'm definitely hoping that we get that series. You know, this is one of my personal favorite young rivalries that I've been able to watch this year. And I just hope that we continue to get more of it moving forward. SeatGeek is now a proud sponsor for the love of the game. There's a lot of events coming up like the Super Bowl and the NBA All-Star Game that you don't want to miss. I can admit, for a person like myself, the ticket prices can be a little outside of my range. However, here's where I'm here to help. If you want to save some money on ticket prices, use code LOVEATTGBBALL to take $20 off of your first purchase. The code will be at the bottom of the description, and make sure to save a little bit of money. Now, let's get back to the episode. Let's switch topics again. I want to talk about the Knicks because I've been seeing some things, some rumors recently about some possible trades that could happen for New York. I know that there's some rumors about Jimmy Butler possibly being traded to New York. I don't know what that package would even look like. But if you ask me, I don't think that the Knicks need to make any trades right now. I mean, obviously, it's been over a month now since they got OG Anunoby from Toronto, and they're 12-2 since they got him. And they're on a current 8-game winning streak as of right now. So do you believe that the Knicks should make more moves around the trade deadline? And if so, you know, what do you see for them?
I do. I definitely wonder what that looks like. I think they need a secondary score. I think, you know, making the trade that they did definitely simplifies what that team looks like in terms of having, you know, Jalen Brunson and then Julius Randle, like a 1A, 1B, whatever you want to call that. Like, that looks, that's great. Like, that's good. I'm glad that that's a thing that you don't have to worry about now, trying to find touches for RJ Barrett, who's, you know, inefficient as he's been throughout his career, right? Or making room for Manuel Quickly, who would be a Knicks star of the future, but he wouldn't be, but he would. You know, like, now it's a little more simple. But now, like, after that, who raised their level of play? You know what I mean? Like, OG Anunoby's probably a third. You know, he wants to be that guy. We haven't seen enough of that, but he's your third guy offensively. And then you're looking at what? You know, you have a bunch of guys. Dante DiVincenzo, you know.
Josh Hart,
Quentin Grimes. You know, like, a lot of just guys that are solid, but not guys you look at like, okay, go and give me like 13 to 15 consistently. Like, they can give you 17, they can give you 8, they can give you 9, they can give you 22. You know what I mean? So, like, I think having another score that can kind of take the edge off, you know, when you have a lot of pressure for a guy like, you know, a lot of pressure for a guy like a Jalen Brunson in the postseason, which we've seen how that gets. Or if you have Julius Randle having an inefficient scoring night, which we've seen how that looks like. Like, you need more guys. It can't just be grinding out for offense every time. So, I mean, is that a player like a Zach LaVine? I don't know how that works. I don't think that does money-wise at all. Like, you're looking for scores. Maybe it's more like a Bojan Bogdanovic, you know? Like, a guy of that ilk. That's, yeah, not coming with the credentials of being a scorer like that. But somebody, I mean, not coming with the credentials of being like a go-to scorer, but somebody who could certainly fill it up.
And I think so let me ask you this. Like, so does it have to be an initial shot creator that can take the pressure off of guys like Jalen Brunson or Julius Randle, or could it just be like just an efficient three-point sniper?
I think it should be a guy who can, like, at least attack a closeout. Like, that's why I said Bojan. Like, Bojan's a three-point sniper, but he can do, you know, situational post-ups. He can attack a closeout, you know, get to the mid-range. Like, something like that. Like, just another shooter is great. Floor spacing, all of that, well and good. But another guy who can actually, like, okay, I give you the ball and, like, somebody can do something, you know?
I'm trying to picture LaVine on this team because he's definitely a guy. I don't know. I like LaVine. I've been a fan. But I don't know if there's, like, an ideal trade package that other teams would want to give up to get him. And I think that's why he's been kind of stuck in Chicago because, you know, there's been rumors about New York. There's been rumors about the Lakers. There's been rumors about Sacramento. But it just seems like teams are not really ideally wanting to really give up any of their young assets or any of their draft picks to be able to get him. And even though, and it's crazy because he's really a great player.
Yeah. No, he is. Absolutely. Like, he's one of those guys. But it's, like you said, it's difficult. It's a little complicated.
Yeah, I definitely agree. But if you ask me about what the Knicks may need, like, if they could get anything, I mean, obviously, yes, I can definitely agree with that as far as another scorer right next to Brunson and Randle. But if they could possibly try to get another big, maybe I could possibly see that as well, especially now that we found out that Mitchell Robinson is going to be out for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. So if they could find another player who can provide that interior presence, that post presence on both ends of the court, somebody who can crash the board, somebody who could possibly space the floor and play, and you could play a five-out style offense. You know, I think that'd be great for them as well. But I wonder who would even be on the market for that, or like that type of archetype.
That's a good question. That's a really good question. I don't even know. Like, you're right. Like, it's not even about the player. Like, we have the player that makes sense for them. It's just who is that player in actuality, and how do we get that? You know, and that's exactly. You're right. That's a tough one.
And that's the thing, because I mean, there's a lot of great bigs, but I don't know if there's any, like, dynamic bigs on the market right now. And I think that's kind of the tough thing. That's that, and like that's honestly the reason why I hate that Mitch is out. And I know that they have Hardenstein, and I'm not saying that Hardenstein.
Well, they have a dynamic big. He dynamically keeps coming back on the team. That's Taj Gibson.
Yes. As long as Tom Thibodeau is around, man, Taj Gibson is going to continue to have a job. Mm-hmm. So. Kudos to Tibbs for looking out for his guys, man. He always looks out for all, like all those Bulls players. There was a time where they were all in Minnesota. Taj, D. Rose, and Joakim Noah. Like, it was crazy.
Yep. It was wild. And that was like literally 15 years ago.
Exactly.
Which is insane to think about.
I'm trying to think. Who is a dynamic big that they could get? Because obviously now Pascal is in Indiana.
Yeah, it's just hard. Like, I'm trying to look at guys. John Collins is available, but not really.
Yeah, I don't know.
Also, I don't know. But I mean, he's dynamic in a way, but not in a way that they need. Yeah, that's a great question. Daniel Gafford, but he's kind of, you know what he is.
Do you think that he's reached the ceiling?
Oh, Gafford, yeah.
Yeah. You think so?
I think Gafford is who he is. Like, well, okay, what has he shown you that, like, you look at, okay, like, he's a guy who he's your straight-up rim runner. He screens and rolls really well. He finishes the lob above the rim. He can get the lob dunks. He makes his free throws when he gets fouled. He hits the glass, right? On defense, he's a good shot blocker. He jumps way too much, but he's a good shot blocker. You know, like he doesn't stretch the floor like that. His passing isn't anything to speak about, really. Like, he's just a really solid rim-running center at his prime age at 25. And so that's what I mean. Like, that works for teams. I mean, I don't mean that in like a negative way. Like, oh, like, he doesn't work. Like, he definitely does. But I don't see him turning into, like, Brook Lopez, you know, something like that in, like, 3 years' time.
Yeah, I mean, you make valid points. I mean, he's not going to be your floor-spacing big, so he's not going to be able to stress the floor from that perspective. But he is a great pick-and-roll partner. He is a great rim runner. And, we already know what he brings as far as defense. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you definitely make some valid points. I don't know. I'm still trying to think of guys. I'm still trying to think of guys across the league. But either way, I still do believe that the Knicks are in need of another big possibly soon. And Hartenstein is good. Like, I'm not against Hartenstein, but mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess I question what type of production that he'll be able to give in the playoffs, potentially. It makes sense.
I get what you mean and what that looks like.
Yeah, because I don't remember if he really made like a big production last year for them, like when they got to the second round and everything.
I mean, did he? I'm trying to think. Not that I remember.
Yeah, I can't really remember much.
I mean, that's the thing. If we can't really remember it, then you know what I mean? Like, he obviously didn't.
Right. So, like I said, I mean, that's definitely something that I think that the Knicks need to figure out. But that's honestly interesting, though, because, you know, we're about, what about it, like another week or so? From the trade deadline, or maybe like 2 weeks. So,
yeah, well, no, we're next Thursday.
Next Thursday, dang, it's already, man, it came quick. Jesus Christ. Yeah,
because tomorrow's the first.
Yeah, that's true.
Jeez. When people listen to this, today's the first. Yeah,
exactly. So, I don't know. I mean, the Knicks have some options on the table. But even if they don't make any moves, I still think that they can be. I mean, obviously, now, you know, we see what they've been doing in the calendar year 2024. You know, it's been a lot of success. You know, they had a big win on Tuesday against Utah, and you know, they're riding on an 8-game winning streak. So I'm really happy for them. So if they can make some moves, that'd be great. But even if not, I still think that they're in a good position moving forward. But yeah, let's go ahead and switch gears again, man. So you brought it up before, and I want to talk about this new rule that the NBA implemented with the 65 game thing, where you have to play at least that amount of games to be eligible for MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, all NBA teams and everything. So explain more as far as why you are a fan of this new rule.
I mean, you want players to play. I get the negative look. I get that, like, players being forced to play when they shouldn't, but I think some of that is overblown. I think really the only person we can really mention that with is Joel Embiid and Tyrese Haliburton. Right. And that kind of sucks, but at the same time, like, no, you're getting paid to play, you know? And I'm sorry, like, injuries are a part of the game, and that sucks. And they've robbed people of their careers. And that's just a reality of the situation. So I'm not really losing sleep about a player missing out on MVP when you have players whose careers were just shortened entirely by injuries. You look at, like, a Greg Oden or Bill Walton or, I don't know, somebody, a Brandon Roy. Like, so many actual great players whose careers were halted. Careers were stunted because of injury. So, like, if you can't play 65 games, like, I'm sorry. That sucks, and I feel for you. But, like, 65 out of 82 missing 17 games is still a lot. That's still a lot. I'm not mad at that. I think maybe make it 60. 60. I wouldn't be mad if it was 60 games. But at the end of the day, no, I want you to play more of your games. No, if you show up for 25 games, no. Like, no, I don't think so. And I think, on the one hand, yes, the people in charge of voting, like awards and everything, have done a decent job of voting for players who, you know, have played more games and have been effective, whatever the case may be. But in this case, I don't have any sympathy for anyone here. Okay, that's not true. I have a little sympathy for Joel Embiid. I have a little bit for Tyrese Haliburton. But, like, not in the grand scheme of things, that's just what happens. I mean, the OKC Thunder had seasons derailed with MVP years from both Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook because of injuries. And their teams were derailed. I just think it's a much bigger thing, and it's a normal thing that happens. And no, if you can play, then you can. If you can't play, okay, that sucks. I'm sorry. But just like injuries are bad luck and that just happens, like, so does missing games. Like, I don't look at it any differently. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, if Ja Morant had been healthy or whatever, then the Grizz would be a better team. Yes, they would. But he wasn't, so here we are. You know, same with MVP. Like, if this guy played 80 games or 70 games, he'd be MVP. But he didn't, so he wasn't. Here we are. Like, it's just black and white to me. I don't really see what the big overthinking is about it. And, like, actually, that's not true. I got to stop saying that. I do see where people are coming from. I just really don't care like that.
No, I definitely agree with you. And, you know, since they announced this rule, I've been kind of going back and forth on it. And I'll have to agree with you. I mean, I am a fan of it. It does suck at the end of the day because you know, these guys are really injured. You know, Tyrese Haliburton was really injured. Joel Embiid, absolutely. You know, when he walked out of that Golden State game, he looked like he was really injured. So I could definitely get, especially with the type of season that Embiid has been having. You know, I think honestly, I mean, I feel like he's been, at least in the games that he's played, he's definitely looked like he's capitalized off of his MVP year last year.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, mm-hmm. No, go ahead. You're good.
Oh, no. Why are you playing so heavy minutes? Like, at the end of the day, if you're injury prone, if there's a thing that happens, then, like, let's take a little bit. Let's, like, play 32 minutes a night. Like, let's try to lessen the risk of injury. If you're a player that's injury prone because you know what you're looking for at the end of the day. Not, oh, well, he seemed questionable. He got to play 65 games, so let's play him 45 minutes. No. No need that's for true. That. So, like, that's my thing. And I get what you – I want you to continue with yours. But I do think the medium is just, like, managing the minutes better. You know, the NBA has lots of people who can play lots of games. You want to see your stars, you'll see them. Maybe see them for 32 minutes a night. And maybe that's where you make your compromise. There's not a minutes limit. There's a games played limit. So just show up, play a bit, you know, move on. Like, I think people are just – and it's the first year of it. But I think it's, like, a black everything or nothing. Like, when the rule happened, I wasn't like, yes, it happened. Thank goodness. I didn't care that much. But it happened, and I looked at it, I'm like, okay, I see where it's coming from, and now we're overcorrecting. I don't think that's worth it. And the players who are saying it, like, isn't it the union that did that? Like, didn't most of y'all agree to this?
Yeah, I mean that is a valid point. Yeah, I mean they did agree to it, but and it's like I say, you know, I can understand it in a way, but I also it also sucks at the end of the day just because you know there are guys who are actually hurt, and I get it. You know, I mean let's just call it what it is. You know, this rule was pretty much implemented because of what took place back 4 or 5 years ago with, you know, Kawhi missing a lot of time and, you know, with the load management. And then other teams saw that and then they started to use it within themselves as well. So, you know, I think throughout, like, you know, the past few years, you know, we've seen a lot of stars, you know, rest there, like, you know, a lot of times. And, you know, I get it. And, you know, sometimes it's not necessarily on them. You know, it could be a front office thing where they say, hey, you know, we don't believe that you're eligible to play tonight, you know. I mean, you're at the end of the day, you know, I mean, they are paying these guys like 8-9 figures. So, you know, I can understand, you know, that they're trying to protect their investment and, of course, have them ready for the real time, which is the playoffs. But at the end of the day, you know, I mean, I think you still got to get through that regular season. You know, we can't just coast throughout the regular season like it doesn't matter. You know, you still got to win games in the regular season in order to make the playoffs. That's why it's so funny when people try to tell me, like, oh, regular season doesn't matter. Like, what do you mean by that? You got to win games in order to make the playoffs. You know what I'm saying? And thank on top you. Of that, exactly. a lot of teams want to fight for home court advantage. So you're going to want to fight for a first seed, a second seed, a third seed, or whatever it is. So, mm-hmm. Like I say, you know, I can understand the rule, but it also sucks at the end of the day. But, you know, I'm definitely not mad at it. You know, and look, I get it. You know, Embiid may average around 35, 36, but if he only plays like 58, 59 games and he misses 23, 24 games, you know, I mean, it's kind of hard to, you know, give it to a guy like, I don't know, like maybe like a Giannis who plays 72, 73 games and, you know, he's been consistently there for his team.
Exactly. Like, it's unfortunate. I get it. but it is what it is right now. Maybe there will be some look back after a year, so I just don't think it needs to be something that's immediately like, oh, we made a mistake. No, I think it's unfortunate. You know, I think Joel Embiid probably stands to suffer the most because he was clearly the MVP this season, at least in my mind. But I thought Shea had a conversation as well. I thought other guys had a conversation as well. It's part of the intrigue of the league. It's part of what it is. Like, there's not a perfect scenario in my mind for it. Maybe there's one better than this. Maybe there's one that's worse, but this is the one we have.
But honestly, you made a real valid point when you talk about, you know, limiting the minutes, because I don't think people really know that. And I get it, because there's a lot of teams where the stars kind of, you know, run their own minutes. Like, I mean, like, for instance, like, you know, I mean, I think there was a play where people thought that LeBron had subbed himself out, and they were like, oh, Darvin Ham, like, you know, had lost the team and everything. But and I mean that could be the case. You know, there could be some teams out there where the star player says, hey, I'm going to come out whenever I feel tired, or, you know, whenever I feel like, or whenever I do feel like I'm coming out. And then next thing you know, they're playing 42, 43, 44 minutes. And then next, you know, over the next few weeks, you know, they're feeling drained, they're feeling tired, or, you know, they may be dealing with some lingering injury. So I think that is something where the front office can step in. And on top of that, the coaching staff can step in and say, hey, you know, we're going to limit your minutes because we still got to play 82 games. You know, we still got to get throughout the season. And we want to make sure that you are at your best by the time playoff time comes around.
Exactly. Exactly. No, I 100% agree with you. I think that's the important thing to do, and something that's not being considered as much, in my own personal opinion.
Yeah, I definitely agree, man. So let me ask you this real quick. So do you possibly see Joel Embiid missing out on these MVP opportunities or these All-NBA opportunities?
I could see it as a possibility, and I think maybe, like I said, maybe lowering it down to 60 games makes some sense. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think it should be tied to like major awards. Like, I don't know, the ones where maybe that looks at how you restructure contracts with incentives, right? Because that is something you have to take into account. But like, I don't want people to miss out on money for all NBA team stuff like that. But for like, I don't know, like certain, like, okay, All-Stars aren't dependent on games played, right? Like, you'd be voting All-Star no matter what. Like, I think there's certain elements that shouldn't be. But like, yeah, major awards, yeah, I think that it should be. You are an imprint on the season, and yeah, I just don't think one player's 25 games are more dominant than other guys' 55 or 60.
Right.
You know, I don't think a quarter of the season is that much more, like, that much more impactful than another guy playing, like, three-fourths of it. And that's just not something that I'm able to wrap my head around right now. So, yeah, I think there might be, and if that's the case, like, I will feel bad. You know, I'm not going to make decisions here. I'll feel a little bit bad. But at the end of the day, like, some of it is just, it is what it is. It's part of what it is. Like, the championship's lost because of injury. Like, I feel like we're kind of taking it to a microcosm when, like, on the grand bigger scale, we're going to start taking back playoff series because, oh, this guy tried to fight through it. If the 76 make it to the playoffs right now and Joel Embiid's injured, they lose. Is it going to be a knock on his legacy? No. But bottom line, another year went by. He didn't win anything because he was injured. Like, that's just what it is. It's one of those things. Like, there's not everything can be carefully controlled.
No, I definitely agree. I mean, it's, you know, injuries are a part of the game. You know, they're naturally going to happen. You know, this is a physical sport. So, you know,
yeah, this ain't 2K.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's like, you know, I mean, this is stuff that's going to happen with anybody. You know what I'm saying? I mean, especially if you're playing out on that court every single night, you're playing above 35, 36 minutes a game, which is, it's just inevitable. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's a new rule, and it seems like this is a rule that's going to be around for a while. So it's just all about, you know, from the front office perspective and the coaching staff perspective, that especially when you have a superstar caliber player like Joel Embiid, that you make sure that he is ready to go and that he consistently plays throughout the 82 game season so that he can win those accolades and those awards. Mm. But last topic before we get out of here, let's revert back to your Lakers, because like I said, you know, trade deadline is coming up, and the Lakers are currently, I believe, 24 and 25. They're currently ninth in the Western Conference right now. At least to me, it seems like the Lakers are starting to kind of pick things back up, but it's been mostly a struggle since the in-season tournament when they beat Indiana. Mm-hmm. So with the trade deadline coming up, what do you possibly see happening with the Lakers?
I mean, I don't know. I feel kind of weird about it because I don't think there's a lot that they can do. Like, yeah, you can make a trade for DeJounte Murray, and like, I wouldn't like it. You're losing D'Lo. I think D'Lo's been pretty solid this season. But I get it. But, like, is he that much of a difference maker? He's not even a difference maker on his own team in that way. Like, the Atlanta Hawks have been up and down, and he's had statistically great numbers. Like, he looks fine, but the team's just not been super great. So, like, what is that about? You know, you bring him to the Lakers, you're asking him to go from being a second option or a 1B to being a clear third behind LeBron, behind AD. Also, good thing you make it 36% of your three-point shots. Like, will that be something that can carry us to LA? Because let's be real, anybody who's a shooter comes to LA, they don't carry their shot with them. Especially, in my mind, an iffy shooter like DeJounte Murray. Like, we've seen that, right, Nick? Like, it's been since, you know, since they traded Avicii Zubac for...
Who was that, Mike Muscala?
Thank you. Was, yeah. Yep. Once that started, you've had him. You've had, you know, from him to Malik Beasley and everywhere in between. Danny Green. Like, you've had dips from guys who came in shooting a lot better from three. You know? And that's just the thing. So, that's a question I have. Defensively, you know, he's taking a major step back. Is he able to ramp it up now on a contending team? He wasn't really ramping up on a team that was on the rise in Atlanta.
Especially when you give 73 to Luka.
Thank you. yeah, and let's be real. He's also like he's tall, but he's thin. He doesn't have a lot of girth down there. Like, he's not that type of guy. You still have the issue of who's sticking your Kawhis, who's sticking your Paul Georges. Like, that's still an issue. I mean, I guess LeBron sticks Kawhi, but you know what I mean. Like, that's still an issue there. I just don't really know what he solves that much better than what you already have. And I just think the long and short of it is the Lakers are a mediocre basketball team. It sucks. I hate to say it, but they just are. And maybe there isn't a movement that sucks because it is LeBron's age 39 season playing as great as he has. And AD's been mostly healthy up until this point of the season, but playing great as well. But like, there isn't a major difference maker out there. Like, you weren't in the mix for Pascal Siakam. You weren't in the mix for OG Anunoby. You know, now you're more in the mix of a Zach LaVine. That's not really going to do it. A DeJounte Murray. Like, what are we doing? It's almost like the Lakers in free agency back in the day when it was like, we can get Carmelo. We can get LeBron. Ooh, Paul Millsap. Ooh, Greg Monroe. Like it just kind of went lower and lower. And no disrespect to those players, they're all great, but there's a difference between Greg Monroe and Paul Millsap, and Paul Millsap and Carmelo Anthony, and Carmelo Anthony and LeBron James. You know what I mean? So, and then ultimately you end up with Carlos Boozer and Jeremy Lin. So, like, you get what I'm saying? Like, there's, I don't know. This is one of those things where I'm like, at this point, if you can make a trade with the Bulls and get a guy like DeMar DeRozan, get a guy like Alex Caruso, bring Caruso back, get a guy in DeRozan who can score buckets on an expiring contract, you know, trade out some guys that don't fit anymore. If that is D-Lo, so be it. I get it. Then maybe that helps you. Like, are you on par with the Nuggets? No, the same issues you had there, you still have. But now you're a little bit better around the edges, and that probably is the best the Lakers can hope for now.
I can't believe you just brought up the poverty days of the Jeremy Lin saga and the Carlos Boozer.
Bro.
I remember the Jordan Hill.
Yes. You know, those teams. Right? Like, these were – Ryan Kelly, I thought was going to be a star.
Oh, yeah, Ryan Kelly.
Kendall Marshall. Yeah. Yes. Jordan Farmar. Wesley Johnson. Come on now. We know. We hoop guys. Oh, we know this team. We know this.
Who was on there? Ed Davis was on that team,
Davis was on that team. Nick Swaggy P. Nick Young. The Lakers will always get up for games against the Clippers and the Heat. They'd get the games they get blown out in the one game where they'd be in it.
And that is true.
Yeah, that is true.
I mean, you just reminded me of that Christmas game that they had when Miami went into town. I think it was like 2013 or 14, one of those years.
Mm-hmm.
But, that was funny. But one thing that I'll say is, at least from what we've seen in LeBron's four championship seasons, the formula is to have knockdown shooters. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's why. And that's why even the year that they acquired Russell Westbrook, I was saying, I don't know how this is going to fit. And, you know, people were getting mad at me because they're like, oh, you're being a hater and this and that. And it's like, it's not that I'm hating. It's not that I never said that Russell's going to play better. I just don't think that they're an ideal fit. And we saw that in that first season to the point where the next season, Russ had to step into the second unit role because they couldn't coexist on the court. You know, Russ was not a viable perimeter scorer, you know, and he needed the ball in his hands to be effective. And especially if you're playing in a lineup with LeBron James, LeBron's going to be the primary ball handler. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So, I mean, you look back at those championship teams, like even the 2020 team, you had Danny Green, you had Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, you had other guys. I mean, hell, even Rondo was knocking down some shots, luckily. You know, Rondo was not even known as a three-point shooter or whatever, or even a perimeter scorer overall. So, you know, I think that's been the formula. And, I mean, we've had some glimpses of that. You know, D'Lo is very valuable, and that's the thing too. Because I know that people hate D'Lo because he does have his inconsistent moments. But when D'Lo is going, and D'Lo is just caught fire from three, like there's no stopping him. And that's the thing. And you mentioned it earlier because he has tremendous confidence. Like, you know, he's not going to get shaken by a bad performance. You know, he's going to come back, and he's going to try to, you know, play at his best. You know, I mean, and we saw that even in the playoffs last year. You know, he had a big game six against Memphis. In that first round, you know, and he had a couple big other performances, and even in this game against Golden State this past Saturday. You know, so that's the thing about D'Lo, is that D'Lo is kind of hard to pinpoint in a way, but when he is going, like, you know, he's a valuable asset to this team. So that's why it's kind of hard to trade a guy like D'Lo. But how do you feel about anybody else on the table, like a Rui Hachimura or a Vando or whoever?
I mean, Vando's solid. Plus, he can't be traded this year just because of the contract he just recently signed.
Oh, yeah, that's
signed. Right, yeah. So he's good. Rui, I just feel, has been underutilized. Like, he makes sense to be moved, I guess, to somebody who's, like, on a decently sized contract. But honestly, like, I haven't seen enough of him. Thank you, Darvin Ham. Like, we don't know what that looks like, right? Aside from that, like, I like I said, you know how I feel about D'Angelo Russell. Like, if it has to happen, fine, but I think he's been just fine. I don't think his issues here are really anything other than just the roster, right? And then if it was me, I'd move like a Gabe Vincent. I move like a why am I not remembering his name? Jackson Hayes. I do not like him. Like, move the guys who aren't really factoring. No, I didn't understand when they brought him, man. Like, why? Like, what was the point of that? I had no idea.
That's honestly kind of how I feel about Christian Wood. And it's not because Christian Wood is a bad player. I don't know.
See, and I love me some Christian Wood. I think he should have a bigger opportunity. And for whatever reason, doesn't have it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I get what you're saying, and it's interesting. But, like, that's where I'm at. Like, he could do, in my mind, a lot more than he has been doing. And so I definitely – but that's the thing. Like, Darvin Ham's made it so hard with his
own – Do you think a guy like Max Christie should get a bigger opportunity?
I mean, no, not really. I mean, he's good, but is he – like, who is he getting more minutes over? Like, let's be real. Honestly, I'd have him get more minutes over Torian Prince. But Darvin Ham seems to get off on playing Torian Prince 28 minutes a night. He does. There's something there. I don't know what it is, but there's something there. So, fine. Like, he's not going to play over Torian Prince. I don't think he should play over D'Angelo Russell. I don't think he should play over Austin Reeves. So, you're not sliding up to the three like that. That's where Vando is. That's where LeBron is. You know, that's where, I guess, Rudy will be sometimes. Like you got to get the backcourt spots. You're not better than the backcourt guys. You haven't proven that this season. So, in my mind, no.
I can understand that. It's interesting that you mentioned Jackson Hayes, because I was a guy that was thinking, like, man, like, maybe if he had a bigger opportunity, maybe he could be more productive for the team. Well, because I guess maybe because I was such a big fan of him in New Orleans, and then once he got with the Lakers, I was like, okay, maybe this might be a good opportunity for him.
Well, like, that's my thing. Like, what did he do? What does he do?
I mean, at least to me, you know, he's a great rim runner. Obviously, you know, he's got great athleticism, but that might just be it.
Great. Yeah. So you're a dollar store Daniel Gafford. Congratulations. You know what I mean? He still battles foul trouble, doesn't space the floor, not really super, like, he doesn't have great floor awareness. Like, he just runs and jumps, and that is amazing, and I love it, and good for him. Like, Christian Wood's actually skilled basketball-wise in other ways. Like, is he a star? No, I wouldn't say he's a star, but he's somebody who can do a lot more. He's somebody who can shoot the ball, space the floor. He's rebounds well. He's been a great defender for the Lakers, you know, considering what he was looked at. Like, he does these things that actually impact the team a lot more than Jackson Hayes, who gives you 15 minutes before he's in foul trouble.
No, that is a solid point. So let me ask you this. Would you have been a fan if the Lakers would have found a way to get Terry Rozier? Because I know that was a guy that was kind of on the radar for the past, like, maybe a few years.
Yes and no. He would have been better offensively. He would have been a good shooter. You know, a guy who can create some own offense on the side. I love that. But at the same time, he's also somebody who is undersized, right? Also somebody who struggles defensively. Not the scary Terry of old in Boston. But, like, that would be an issue as well. Like, he's a better scorer than maybe an Austin Reeves, maybe a D'Lo. But, like, just as bad a defender. So how big of an upgrade is it really? And you're on a longer-term contract taking you into your 30s. Because he'll be 30 in a month and a half. So, like, in that way, no, not really. It was kind of a mix. I love Terry Rozier. I'm a scary Terry fan, and so I get it. But from, like, the league perspective, a long-term money for a guy who is what he is already isn't really a demonstrably better upgrade over the players you already have doing the exact same thing, and is older, and you're going to pay long-term money into the next couple seasons. Yeah, ultimately, I'm glad it didn't happen. But it definitely, if it had happened, I have my reservations. But at least for this season, I would like it.
I can definitely understand your points, but I guess I was looking at it from more of an offensive standpoint to where the Lakers did need more efficient scorers playing next to guys like LeBron and AD. So that's why I would have loved Terry Rozier from that perspective. But, I mean, you definitely do pinpoint his defense, and, you know, his defense is not – I mean, especially being, like, you know, kind of like a smaller guard, because even in those lineups that he played next to LaMelo, he's more so playing, like, the two-guard position. And obviously, Mm-hmm. He's a very undersized too when he's placed in that position. So, and I'm sure that he probably, I'm sure that he probably would have been placed in those positions at least a few times with the Lakers. So that definitely would not have been great for them defensively at all.
Yeah, and like that, no, not at all. And like offensively, be good, another shooter, another spacer. But again, like you got a tight defensive on the floor because he got to as well. Like that's the thing. If you're starting Torian Prince and you're starting D'Angelo Russell or Austin Reaves alongside Terry Rozier, your backcourt is toast defensively. Like it's toast. LeBron at the four, AD at the five, they're doing a lot of cleanup. And really, it's just AD doing a lot of cleanup. Like you can't do the offense without doing the defense, right? And yes, you have another guy who can bring the ball up the floor with Terry Rozier. That's great. I don't really think he's bringing the ball up the floor is the issue. It's putting the ball in the basket. Now, Terry does a great job of doing that. But if you have Austin Reaves there as well, and you have D'Lo, I assume D'Lo would probably be traded for this. So let me stop bringing D'Lo as
a he probably would.
This is the Corbin insanity here. But like, bottom line, like, is Terry a better scorer than D'Lo? Yes. This season,
I would say yes. Yeah,
D'Lo's been D'Lo can ramp it up. I'd say Terry is a naturally
better, probably more consistent scorer.
There you go. But I would like D'Lo more for his playmaking. Like I think he has the edge there. Defensively, I think they're a wash. And D'Lo's a little bit taller, isn't he?
Yeah, D'Lo's about 6'5". Yeah,
and he's 3 years younger.
Yeah,
so 2.5 years younger. So like that's why I lean that way. But make no mistake. I love Terry Rozier, but I just feel like for the fit for this team, while it would have done something good short term, I don't think it would have really helped.
No, I definitely get that. So, with us being a week away, do you see the Lakers making at least one trade, or do you think that this is going to be the roster that they run with throughout the rest of the year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they'll make a trade. I think they'll make a trade. I think they'll do something. I don't know what that is exactly. If it is the D'Lo trade, it looks like it could be, but it seems the Hawks want Austin Reaves, and Lakers don't want to let him go. So we'll see what that looks like. Maybe the smaller trade to, you know, the Pistons for Bojan Bogdanovic, or, you know, maybe Utah gets involved in something. Honestly. Yeah, no, I'd like that. Like, it'd be like,
I wonder what that would look like though.
I mean, they have the same trade assets. So one of Rui Hachimura, you know, D'Angelo Russell, Gabe Vincent, you know, like they're not trading anyone we don't know, right? For what, Bojan Bogdanovic and Alec Burks?
Possibly.
You have
to
go in your first round pick.
I mean, Alec's been, at least throughout the last like few years, and I think Alec's been really, really valuable in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think on a winning team, it would be more useful than on a team like Detroit.
Right. Because, I mean, I'm even thinking about during that year in Golden State, when Golden State was just depleted, and they only won like probably 15 games that whole year. He actually has some good showing there as well. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe Alec could be better in a winning environment that could help him. You know, get some notoriety for him.
Yeah, exactly. It could be something that helps him out.
Right. But Corbin, my guy, I appreciate you for joining on, man. You know, we definitely got to do this again. By the way, I got to get back on your show as well, man. But definitely let the people know where to find you and, of course, where to find the podcast as well.
Hey, I appreciate you, man. We got to collab real soon. Like, we'll talk about
it. We're going to, man. We got more on the way real soon.
Yes, we do. We got to be more collaborators on this for sure. But you can find me all on Twitter, X, at CorbinNBA, CorbanNBA. Ramble, show I do most of the time here. A recap of the games, general NBA thoughts, roster reconstruction of the podcast. I do a Switch Theory, more general conversations on the three tenets of team building. So trades, free agency, and the draft. And some fun exercises that go around that with team building. So that's kind of what we're on right now. We might have some other stuff coming to the pipeline that I'm excited to share. We'll see how that goes down. But yeah, that's where you can find me right now. And as always, Nick, I appreciate you, man. Like I said, one of the people I look up to in this space. So it's great.
Not a problem, man. For those who may want to know, man, how much we're dedicated, man, at least it's midnight my time.
I got an hour on. We're up late. Out here.
Yeah, we're up late tonight. But no, man, I definitely appreciate it, man. I know that it's late, man. And you know, I know that, you know, you probably had a long day, but I definitely appreciate that for sure. But make sure everybody's listening and be on the lookout for everything that Corbin has coming up. And then, of course, me and him, we will be collabing again really, really soon. But as for the show, follow the show on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. I love it, TGB Ball. Follow myself at Nick Andre ATR. Make sure to subscribe on anywhere you listen to your podcast, Apple, Spotify, iHeart, you name it. And once again, I appreciate everybody for listening in. And until next time, you guys, deuces.